Conscious Living and Power Radio. You know what? It's about time that I actually gave you some more information on the stuff that I do. Because we've talked off, you know, for the past several years, however long I've been doing this, I can't remember at this point.
It's kind of in a haze.
But I kind of gloss over the writing and the blogging and the behind the scenes stuff. I read a tremendous amount of material, and some of it, you know, in one ear or in one eye, out the other. But what does stick, and what I've always been fascinated by, are the real stories, the real encounters, the people who are intimidated or frightened or shy and thinking that nobody else will understand what they've been through and nobody else will get their story. They're afraid to tell anybody close because of what might happen. And there's that feeling of being shamed, being rejected, and in so many ways made to feel less than. So I wanted to get into, for this show, that space of being comfortable and trusting that the experiences that you have, that I have, that we have, are valid and they are important. And when you are comfortable with whatever it is you've gone through, make an effort, make a point, find an excuse to share it. You don't have to share it with the entire planet. You may just put it in a diary. You may tell a very close friend, or you may tell a perfect stranger. But tell somebody. Because in the act of telling your story, you validate your experience. And sometimes you can just let it go. Other times, you can explore it and find out, well, what does it mean? The example for this is Travis Walton. Travis Walton was the guy who was abducted, you know, Fire in the Sky, the movie about it. Abducted, and the people around him all went back to the truck, and he said, I'm going to go explore. I'm going to go see what's out there. I'm going to go take a look. And they're going, no, we're not going. We're not. Well, he went to take a look, and then you know the rest of the story. For years, that story had a certain presentation, and Travis had a certain attitude. He's changed. He's shifted. He's evolved. He's expanded. He's come to a different point of view. At first, he thought that they had pretty much, you know, abused, hurt, intentionally damaged him and violated. You know, it's like, it'd be like going and picking up a rat out of the middle of a cage and saying, okay, here, you're my next test subject. And the rat says, oh, thanks. Thrilled. Glad to be here. Which all rats, I'm sure, are doing when they're going to be tested. Okay, well, that's how we would feel. And if we acknowledge that animals have feelings, they might not be so thrilled about being a test subject either. What he came to the conclusion of much later was that he had been injured, and that was not the intent. And in order to fix that little oops, then there was this effort to pick him up and take him aboard the ship and do some repair work, which might not have been pleasant. Okay, I'm paraphrasing, and I'm giving you a different perspective on something that could be extremely traumatic at first, not having any frame of reference for something like that to exist in the first place, and then having to figure out, you know, when it's happened, what the heck to do with it, who to tell, whether you tell it. And at the same time, if you don't tell it, there are people around there who went through days of looking for somebody, thinking that they were dead or, you know, some way, shape, or form had just vanished off the place of the, off the face of the planet. A whole lot of questions about that and about our reality and what we expect to be real. If he had not told his story at the time that he was ready to tell it and in the view that he had of it, we would have lost a piece of this equation. The important piece is that when these things first happen, sometimes they are so absolutely gobsmackingly unreal that the first inkling, the first reaction is that fight or flight, get me the heck out of Dodge. And then, if you remember it, there's that thing of, has my brain been altered? Is this a screen memory? After you read a bunch of stuff, you hear about these things and you know the right labels. Have I been tampered with? This must be really, you know, those men in black. And who knows where they come from? Or the women in black? Or the weird black social worker-esque people who show up. And I don't know if it's because they're all wearing black or they're shadow people. Every story is different. But if we don't tell these stories, we have no possible hope of connecting dots and understanding the psychology that goes on with this. Because the first experience, in my experience, takes about 10 years to unravel and uncork and unscrew all of the stuff that it just completely, totally deranged. Everything was all neat and tidy. Everything all fit. It all went together. It had a purpose. It had a reason. It was logical. It made sense. It worked in our reality. 9 to 5, have kids, picket fence, white horse, I don't know, all that stuff. Go to school, get a degree. None of that fits in this world of people walking into your room through the wall and saying, hey, let's go for a little trip. What? And they may or may not look like you. Everybody has different experiences with that. Some of these experiencers report human forms, as did Travis Walton. I'm not going to get into all of his details with that story, but my point was more that when he first had the experience, it was so completely out of his realm of belief that it was mind-shattering. And so he had to integrate it piece by piece by piece as he became less frightened, less shattered, you know, less psychologically PTSD anxious over what might happen as a result. All of that stuff had to kind of calm down, had to be put back in a way that made sense. Because if this can happen when it doesn't exist, according to everybody else around you, then what else is going on here that we haven't yet factored into our equations? So with that, I just wanted to get into more of these incredible experiences that some people can integrate better than others. And it isn't always an overnight process. It's a process of evolution, of experiencing more sometimes of that unusual, unexplained experience, encounter, awareness, so that you can expand your vocabulary and understand how you respond in those situations. Now, I've had experiences with spirit guides, with ghosts, with ET, with whatever you call it. They call them in some ways, you know, this is, we don't have the language yet, but what I have been given is transdimensional. And what they have said, because it's a telepathic communication, is that we don't want to frighten you. Because I said, why can't I see you? We don't want to frighten you. And then I'm thinking, oh, wow, some giant insect. Or, you know, or a big mushroom that talks. What could it be? Why are they afraid of frightening me? Well, apparently they have good reason. And they've probably done a test run to see my response. Okay? But part of that, too, was that when I was given a warning, and I had had experiences with ghosts, I had had experiences with my nightlight. It was all that auditory, telepathic sense ability. And learning how to channel, learning how to be receptive, learning how to tune out the monkey mind and become calm and in some way, shape, or form receptive. I had learned those things. And I was still being told, we don't want to frighten you. But I thought it was interesting because we come in peace was a thing. I'm thinking, wow, that's kind of like everybody does that, don't they? This is just common. Okay, we come in. Well, all right. Okay, I'll go along with this. We'll see where it goes. But with that, then when I was awakened at 3 o'clock in the morning and heard that voice, an electronic type voice, that's the best way I can say, you know, an automated electronic, not a human voice, some kind of a technology. And it could be even because of the way it comes through from dimensions that it sounds that way. And it isn't necessarily mechanical. We jump to a lot of conclusions trying to describe this stuff. But what I heard was so foreign what the resonance with that felt like was so unfamiliar that it absolutely immediately sent me into fight or flight. And I felt myself physically freeze from toe to head. My whole body froze. And at that point, knowing that they had warned me that I needed to get over my fear, and I thought that that meant like a physical fear of being attacked, of being in some way, shape, or form by a person assaulted, in some way, shape, or form by a ghost, frightened. I didn't understand that one of the most important and biologically ingrained things that we have going for us in terms of sensing whether we're safe or we're in danger is auditory signals, auditory cues. That's why listening to things is powerful. You are programming yourself without even thinking. You don't have to think. You feel it. It resonates or it doesn't. But when that sound resonated, I was absolutely petrified. And I knew it, so I shut it down. I'm like, oh, darn it. Stop it. But that was the moment. That light bulb, this is what they're talking about. Because our species is not familiar with this kind of interaction, this kind of engagement. Our species is evolving to be able to have contact with other beings, other physicalities, other dimensions, other life or light forms. Since you can't see, and I'm not sure if I'm enunciating well enough, I want to differentiate between the two, life or light, because they're different. They're unique. They're both sentient consciousness. So with that, we as a species are collectively evolving as we share our experiences and enlighten and influence and educate all of those in our sphere by saying, I had this happen. This was my experience. It does not matter how many people believe. It matters that the stories get out. Because once you have had an experience, no one can take it away from you. They can laugh. They can chuckle. They can validate. They can appreciate. They can do all those kinds of reactions. But your reality, your consciousness, your story is totally up to you. So anytime you feel discounted and devalued, remember, you're choosing to allow that influence. You're choosing to take that on. Because if you have had a legit and in your own frame of reference, credible encounter, well, the first time, it's going to feel just like gobsmackingly, awesomely, unexplainable, no words, no vocabulary, nothing will bring it to light. But you won't be able to forget it. You'll know. And if you do shove it aside, that's an intentional thing. It's a putting it in a little tiny box or a big box or somewhere until you're ready to reconcile, to re-examine, to become more aware of what actually happened. So as these things continue to happen, then we get the benefit of learning, of knowing, of becoming more comfortable, less fearful, less skeptical. I was talking to somebody about this, the skeptic, and I understand being objective and withholding judgment. The skeptic by nature is determined to devalue, disassociate, in any way, shape, or form. I don't know. It's almost like it's deactivate, but deny is the big one. the experience, the reality, the validity by just saying, no, wrong, doesn't exist. I don't buy it. And that's okay. That's a safety zone because it doesn't require a whole lot of effort to say, I don't believe it. I don't buy it. You can't prove it. That's not much effort. The harder part is to try and explain to somebody who doesn't get it what the heck, what happened when you have no language for it and they are not receptive. There's no science involved in saying it doesn't exist. Really? there's no science. Because the science comes from proving something exists. And that is really hard when you're talking about ghosts and they don't register by our physics, by our math, that we're still discovering things to make this quantum field concrete. And that's kind of, anyway, you get the point. I remember first going through this with that other level of trying to figure out how to make sense of things that didn't make sense. And the guides gave me a vision, dream vision in between. It's when you're more waking and giving this, you're getting an impression that makes sense. And it's intentional. It's, you know, here, let us try and explain it. And so I was in a room with this giant white, almost silvery white contraption that if I were to put a name to it, I would say it had little holes in it. It was like a colander, only it was a room size colander, bigger than me. I couldn't see the whole thing. I couldn't see if it was round. I couldn't see if it was, you know, the shape of it in totality. I could only see the part I was working with. And they said, that's your view of reality. In other words, we don't have the big picture. We have the tiny frame that we are working with at the time. And I could see the holes. I could see the shape. I could see just what was in this frame of reference for me personally. I was right up close to it. Like sitting in front of a window and looking out the window blinds, but not being able to see the sides of the window or the room, only being able to see that. And thinking, well, that must be window blinds because it's blocking my view, when it could be something entirely different. But I don't have the ability to put all that together. And that's where we are, all of us, in our own frame of reference. You have an out-of-body experience, and all of a sudden your frame of reference shifts. You have a near-death experience, your frame of reference shifts. And then the world becomes much more malleable. Everything is relative. Everything is like, oh my gosh. From that perspective, things are much more, it's less, I think, serious, less personal, less negative. It's more objective. There are more possibilities and potentials. And that's where we're learning with these experiences. So I wanted to refer to one. I interviewed Nick Redfern about that book, 365 Days of UFOs, A Year of Alien Encounters. And when I do these interviews, a lot of times, and this is what I'm focusing on more now, is writing some kind of a little bio, some kind of a little overview, some kind of a little write-up that puts maybe a few pieces, a few sentences. I don't want to, it's not a long thing. It's not like a regular book review. It's just like we had a conversation and here are the highlights. Also, with what else might be going on in the world. I put that stuff now on Wendy's Coffee House. Now, I had been doing it, Talking to Nightlights. I've gone a different direction with Talking to Nightlights. Some of that is more personal with the book and with my other personal encounters in the way I'm framing this to make sense and maybe help somebody who's going through this in their own way to say, that works for me. Oh, nope, not that. To rule out and rule in the things that resonate. So with Nick, he covers a lot of material. If you look at his website, look at his blog, you find out he covers all sorts of Fortean things, cryptids. He's all across the board. This stuff is fascinating to him. So he's out there, you know, looking and picking up rocks and going behind curtains and figuring out whatever he can to help bring more validation, value, concrete information to this topic, to this field. This is one where when she, it is for March, and we're not on that day, just whenever day you happen to figure it out, but March 26th or 27th, I have to get the right date because it does make a difference. Yeah, amazing that. She's in Puerto Rico, and she was out picking plantain. And there was, at that time, she's all by herself. And this is a rainforest type environment. And all of a sudden, she said, she looked up, she felt some kind of a resonating hum. Now, when I have felt something like that, it was like a helicopter. And there's no helicopters, but I was just assuming that was a helicopter. And then I realized later when I would hear it, there wasn't a helicopter, at least none that were visible. She looked up and she saw a black triangle. And she said it's about 25 to 35 feet in length, overhead, about maybe 90 to 120 feet up. Glossy, shiny surface. And she said a pencil-thin beam of light shot out the base. It enveloped her in a pink glow. Philip K. Dick, science fiction writer, had an experience that really rocked his world. Now, he was also a fan of substances and had some serious issues with that. But with this, she wasn't doing any substances. And she had this pink light. He talks about it in his own experience, and it really, really blew him so many ways from reality that it was hard for him to figure out how to make this experience make sense. Okay, she had that same thing. She felt like when she was in this light, everything went still. She was frozen, and it seemed like an eternity. Her mind was flooded with images of nuclear destruction and devastation, ecological, completely and total destruction. And she said at the very end of it, she got this little image of a face. The image of a face was that bald head, big black eyes, looked like the alien face on Whitley Strieber's Communion. And she read that book afterwards. I remember having the book Communion. It scared me. Got rid of it. Okay, I don't want this face looking at me. Yeah, now I understand what that was about. It was more about the unfamiliarity and the it was more to me at that point. It wasn't real. It was a ghost story. And so I didn't have room for it in my archives. All right. Now I understand it a little bit better. And these faces, I have seen them in images and in almost like, an impression. One was in a coffee cup. The other one's on a mirror. And the other is just an image in your mind. And so those kinds of things have been happening in a way of connecting and making it less frightening. As I said, we don't want to frighten you. Well, okay, fine. We have to figure out a way to make it less frightening. And she said what happened was after that experience, she became basically a hardcore environmentalist and a vegetarian. The interesting thing with her story is she said a few days later, in that very same area, where she had seen and been beamed by that pink light, there was a sighting reported of a chupacabra. And this is another thing I thought didn't exist. I remember Art Bell talking about chupacabras years ago, thinking, oh, okay, this is, we're going off into weird world. And that's what I appreciate now, is because sometimes this stuff is so unbelievable outside of our own frame of reference, that at the time, you just throw it away. No, I don't want to go there. Later on, when you come back to it and you've had a few experiences of your own, you realize not everybody's going to get the same encounter, the same impact, the same opportunity, because we are all unique, different. We all resonate differently. We have different frequencies. And so where somebody may see a ghost, somebody beside them won't see anything. And somebody, 10 people down will see an ET. That was something I learned when I was dealing with ghosts and somebody who had a sighting and had a little boy who was autistic. I'll tell this in the next break. But that was there's a difference and a reason. So anyway, what she concluded was that there was something about that area and the UFO and the chupacabra were related. It was too much of a coincidence for those things to have happened in that same space. So she drew the connection there. And I've interviewed people about Sasquatch, Bigfoot, who have said that there is a connection between those the Sasquatch and the Bigfoot and the UFOs, ETs. So that part is something we're beginning. It's been one of the guys, it's about 40 years. Kiwani Lapsaritis, I've interviewed him about his personal encounters. This stuff is fascinating. And I just think the more we talk about it, the more we become familiar and comfortable with talking about things that might have at one time, seemed completely impossible. And now we're finding out more people have had these experiences. So maybe it's not quite that impossible. We're out of the realm of potential. And that's where we need to be going so that we can understand what's happening now as this ascension process continues. So back with more. Going to take a quick break and come back with that other story. Conscious living.
This is Nnamdi Asamoah. I play football for the Philadelphia Eagles, but what I do off the field with United Way might be more important. I'm a volunteer tutor and mentor. Why? Because over a million kids a year drop out of school, and that's not okay. It takes 12 years to create a graduate, but it takes about the same time to create a dropout. And the difference between a child becoming one or the other could be me, or it could be you. Studies show that if we get to these kids earlier, their chances are better. And kids who read well by third grade are more likely to graduate. So join me in United Way. Suit up and take the pledge. Become a volunteer reader, tutor, or mentor. Because when a child succeeds, we all succeed. Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Take the pledge at unitedway.org. Brought to you by United Way, the Ad Council, and the National Football League.
Welcome back to The Cat Show. Up next, we have Nico. Nico is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right. A group known especially for their sunspot sleeping, ball chasing, leg rubbing, couch purring, bed leaping, and of course, companionship.
Wonderful. And what breed would you say Nico is?
I'd have to go with a tabby-ish Persian kind of mix.
Tremendous cat.
I'd also like to point out her coat's wonderful mix of colors. Is it black, gray, black, brown?
Somewhere in between.
Indeed.
You know, it's always special when we get to see a cat like this.
Just look how she struts.
It's like she owns the place.
And how she's so incredibly cute in her indifference to commands.
A strong-willed feline.
Ah, and see how she curls up and cuddles her person.
The pitch on her purring is simply perfect.
Nice one.
I know. Fantastic cat.
Fantastic indeed. But really the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Nico is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
So, I'm a dog, and I just got adopted by this new human guy, and I'm starting to wonder how he got along without me. I mean, okay, something as simple as walking around the block. He's got this leash thing, and he puts me on one end and him on the other, and I'm just taking him around. I think he's afraid of getting lost. Without that leash and me guiding him along, I don't think he'd find his way back home. But it's kind of cute.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and theshelterpetproject.org.
Would your business survive a disaster? Nearly two-thirds of businesses aren't prepared for an emergency. And 40% of businesses that experience a disaster never recover. Make an emergency plan now, before it's too late. For a free online tool that helps you develop an emergency plan to keep your business up and running should disaster strike, visit ready.gov/business. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the American Red Cross, and the Ad Council.
Conscious Living. Hi there, I'm Wendy. Conscious Living on Empower Radio. You can hear it nightly, which is a really fun thing about that. 9 p.m. Central Time. The show runs on a regular basis, and I never know in advance. Okay, I get like the week ahead of time, but just tune in, you'll find it. And there are some shows in the archives that have been there for a long time, so there may be a few dated pieces of material, but do your due diligence on that and make sure if it's, you know, if it sounds like it's an older piece, then find out what's current with it. Because some of this, that's the thing, this continues to happen. And some people write a book, they've written another book, and they continue to have more experiences and expand their horizons. And it's just amazing. So much to learn. When I did there was somebody who had a ghost and they were trying to figure out what was going on at their house. The child happened to be ADHD. No. This was autistic. Okay. And so he was, the mom said, what happened, which I thought was fantastic, was that he was sitting on her lap. And as they were sitting there, she saw through the front door kind of an orange glow. And then these people came through almost like a conga line. The first person was carrying a tray and dressed in period clothing that looked like maybe Civil War era. Now, the interesting part about this is they also live up the street from a cemetery. There's a lot more activity, I have discovered, in places like that. And certain people are able to tolerate those kinds of areas better than others. There's just more activity there. I'll say that and leave it there. But the thing was, she hadn't been able until that point to have the child's frame of reference. But because he was sitting on her lap, she was able at that time to see what he had been seeing with these encounters. There's a difference in their frequency, their vibration. He's able to pick up on those, and she isn't. But because they shared that same space, in that moment, she got to participate and then could understand better what he might be accessing and encountering that she has no idea even exists, let alone is going on around him. So that was very illuminating, knowing that, and that you know, when you're around people who have been meditators for years or pray or have elevated their frequency, elevated their vibration, done Reiki, done healing work, work of some kind that shifts them from being just a day-to-day, you know, autopilot going through the motions over and over and over and over and over. This is a different kind of motion. It expands your awareness. It expands your, it grounds you. And at the same time, it lifts you up to a sense of being in better contact with all that is. And so as you feel that, then you're, sometimes you become more telepathic, more sensitive, more intuitive. And those things start happening a little more frequently. And you can appreciate that it sometimes might not be so fun to have all of this information. sometimes you have the information and it really doesn't help if you share it. There's a case in particular where I had for several months been given information that things were going to change, that the job was going to be different, and that this was a company that would be, that would require some downsizing. Okay. And with that, I tried to give hints, because I don't know this information. I have a sense of it, and I have a good understanding that what I'm getting is time specific, and that even if I tell somebody, it would cause a panic because there's nothing that will change it. It's supposed to happen. So this premonition, this other information, just because I have it doesn't mean it's something that will be valued if I share it. So as I do that, and I keep getting these little prods, these little telepathic hints, these little nudges, what I did was I started changing my behavior and withdrawing and taking my energy out of it, knowing there was a transition coming. So when the transition came, it was an acknowledgement and an appreciation that not everybody had the benefit of planning ahead. But even if this is the way this works, if I had given the information out and it had been poo-pooed, devalued, denied, you know, made fun of, and, oh, this can't be right, in the meantime, it would have kept things from going forward. And the people who were doing their best work might have held back as well. For me, it wasn't a matter of I wasn't an integral part. And so it was easier for me to divest, you know, not to say, okay, I will let somebody else take these jobs and run with it, because I knew it was also a message to me that I needed to move forward and step aside. Those are all pieces of the puzzle, and I'm giving you my perspective and the way it works in my reality, in my creation, in my engagement. in my consciousness, is that I was taking that information saying that it was time for me to step aside because there were changes coming. This was a transition. And so when it happens, then people are right place, right time. And I could see it from a different perspective from at one point in my life, being in the middle of it and being hit with a slam door and going, oh, whoops, didn't see that coming. Okay. I had no time to plan, and it wasn't going to help if I did. But this time I could see what it was like. There's so much going on that a lot of times we get pulled into the drama. And if I had wanted to fix it or wanted to make it work, it would have been difficult because I was changing somebody. I was saying things weren't perfect. They weren't acting in accordance with a, you know, like a universal law, something else that's bigger than me that knows why people need to be in certain places. I've learned to appreciate that prophecy isn't always going to be in the best interest, and that things change as consciousness shifts. So to take everything at face value and superficial value is a matter of taking everything with a grain of salt. It's relative. It's necessary in that time, in that knowing. It makes a difference when we have an ego involvement. I want to be right. I want everybody to know I knew this ahead of time. And I told everybody. And at that point, I've had enough information that went the wrong direction, trying to be helpful, that I realized it wasn't my job to solve it. So I guess my point is, as we go through the motions of expanding and evolving and in so many ways becoming more enlightened, then some of these things won't be as important because there will be an appreciation and a knowing that it's all right place, right time. And instead of seeing the catastrophe as the end all, the catastrophe is the shift and the necessary redirect for whatever is coming up. Where's the light? Where's the door? Where is the angel? Where is the next step? And instead of seeing that moment as an end, it's very obviously a transition. That's what makes this stuff to me so incredibly fascinating and helpful, learning that each person who shares their story expands our awareness. And so when we hear from people like Travis Walton, and the woman I spoke about in Nick Redfern's book, 365 Days of UFOs, it comes in handy. Dolores Cannon does a lot of work with her books, and she's got the convoluted universe, and she's deceased. Her daughter, their organization, teaches a specific form of hypnotherapy. And as she does that, she connects with these higher intelligences. The fun thing about that is, for years, when I started doing the channeling, that type of information comes through with channeling as well. So you don't have to do a session with somebody else to get that kind of access to that kind of information. It's just a matter of the more you do hypnotherapy, the more fluent you become in being able to access certain realms, certain aspects of reality. And that makes it, to me, it's fascinating. But I also, again, take it with a grain of salt. Whatever information is coming through is relative in that time, relative to that person, to that activity, to that event in our timeline. I have had my timeline shifted. I've had a direct experience with being in an altered state and conscious, and that's that ET shift that gave me a telepathic pre-premonition, pre-warning, advance notice that I needed to pay attention and this would be happening. And so when it did happen, as I was told, then I wouldn't be frightened. I would be conscious of, for one, the fact that it could happen. That was the first mind shift. And then knowing, as a result, that each and every one of us is potentially able to have a time shift, to have an awareness redirect, so that we can see that we're not exactly living in the concrete reality that we are accustomed to dealing with. And if you take things less seriously, then you start to see stopping off, jumping off, turning points where you can change your reality and you can ask for a different outcome. Cynthia Sue Larson gets into some of that with her reality shifters. And when I did the interview with her, and this is like being in the space where the mom was in the space of the autistic child, because I was doing the interview with her, I had an experience that pretty much validated. I went to the bank, and I'm going to give you my best memory at the moment for that. I went to the bank and I thought I had paid. And then later on, they said I didn't pay. And I'm thinking, well, I remember being there. And the person took the check and it was deposited because I had gone in to do this. It was like a house payment or something like that. It was important. And so not to have paid it was a big chunk. And it didn't make any sense. I knew that it had happened. And so I tried to explain. Well, I came in and there was a new guy at the register helping the other person out. And then it wasn't there. Later on, my account was credited and the payment had been made. And there was no acknowledgement that there was ever a problem. It was just like a time slip. When one reality I made the payment, the other reality I didn't. I have no idea what happened. I do know that it was in response to the reality shifter interview that I was doing with Cynthia Sue Larson to give an idea, an example, a concrete instance of something that can be that small and yet it may or may not have happened so that you could see it and you could contextualize, you could have some kind of it has to be experienced to be ingrained in your physicality, okay? So having gone through that, I know how it feels to be, for one thing, mortified. Oh my gosh, where'd the money go? And then all of a sudden the problem was no longer there. So that's my just overview, condensing that experience. It was enough to make me appreciate the fact that everybody's going to have some of these moments in some way, shape, or form for us to progress, for us to get to the next level of reality, of creating, of knowing that we are consciously impacting our environment with our thoughts, with our beliefs, with our actions. And so when they say that, you know, every thought has a physical manifestation, the potential reality, thoughts are things. The better you are at focusing, at being very, very direct with whatever thought you have, the more likely you're going to see a corresponding reaction from your physical environment. It's as simple as that. Once you engage that little piece of magic, once you engage that superficial awareness to the deeper knowing, the deeper conscious being, you are illuminated. And that, for me, is what a lot of this is about. So as I work with my blog, and as I write, and as I'm in this news environment, not necessarily hardcore, you know, political, if it bleeds, it leads, shootings and all that, more of the what's coming out from the futurists, what's coming out from the medical environment, what's coming out from a lot of this is, you know, just a complete daily stream of consciousness from the universe. So much productivity, so much ongoing headlines. Some of them, like the Atacama skeleton, is human. At one point, this little teeny tiny being, people were, oh, it's an ET. It has to be an ET. It's so weird. It's so warped. It's so unfamiliar. It's so foreign. It can't be human. The DNA tests say that, yes, there's a reason for this little being. And although the little being was very deformed and unhealthy, given what we would consider healthy, that the being is still human. The Star Child skull, Lloyd Pye, was a tireless promoter of the Star Child skull, thinking it had to be alien because it was so unusual. They've done the same thing, DNA tests, and the same thing. They found out that there is a reason and a biological connection, DNA connection, with the Star Child skull. Two of those things, because of our science, have been determined to be not what people were hoping. That doesn't mean that there isn't potentially a discovery of something similar. Just because that has been ruled out, there are still unknowns. Unknowns for me. Artie Six Killer Clark interviewed, and this is what her forte, interviewing Native Americans and Native peoples, because she also went to South America, getting stories from people that it required a translator because they don't usually talk, for one thing, to strangers, and another thing, to people who don't speak the language, because then there's that disconnect of, can I trust you? Can I trust you? But she was able to break that barrier and traveling. I think it was 8 years of collecting these stories. One of the guys said he went up on a ship and would go up there and work the gardens, tend the gardens on this massive ship that's somewhere out in the, out there around our planet. Well, the story's real for him. So I have no problem conceptualizing and thinking, what does that mean? The other story she had was a guy named Tom who approached her, and she's since become friends with him, and he had gave her the story of traveling through a portal, ending up from one, going in one place and coming out another, and saying that they're here and we can see them. We know where they are. And I have had other people tell me that they are real. I have not experienced that. What I have seen, I've seen portals open. That in-between state where, like the little boy who was sitting on his mom's lap, the wall all of a sudden becomes fluid and something walks through it. To me, that's a portal. It's an opening, a doorway into a different realm, a different dimension. The thing is, I buy these stories because I've experienced it. At the time when I first heard Travis Walton's story, when I first heard Art Bell talking about Whitley Strieber and the book Communion, to me, those were fiction. And now they're just another room in reality that we have the potential to step into, to fall into, to slip into, but we have the potential to experience. And we are more comfortable with that potential if we have had maybe a teeny tiny baby step in that direction. So when my reality was shifted and I could see that we could go into a completely different experience, when somebody else said, this is going to happen. And this was the day that I stepped out and all of the vehicles on the road in the particular area of the suburbs that I am in were neutral colors. No reds, no yellows, oranges, greens. Everything was a shade of white or black, gray, silver, in between. But the colors were gone. And I was like, wow. And now, I look back and say that they were showing me that the world that I'm in isn't black and white. But this other world, everything's black and white, very concrete, very, specific. Definitely not a world I wanted to stay in very long. But the other thing they told me, which made it be more relevant and more personal and possibly important, was that I was not to telegraph that I thought anything about this world was unusual or different. I was explicitly told, with no uncertain terms, do not telegraph your presence. And that made me think, because I hadn't even, I was like, okay, all right. Well, what would be the problem with that? Well, if you've seen Star Trek, if you've seen any kind of a sci-fi thing, it might be because once you imprint in that environment and you pick up as weird on their radar, you might have to stay there longer to get yourself out of the mess that you just created. Just walking through and not bothering anybody or ruffling any feathers, you're going to be fine. They won't even know you're there. You'll look like one of them. Okay? But going through and saying, wow, you guys are weird. How come everything here is black and white? Why? Where's the color? And they'll, you know, then all of a sudden you've made some kind of a spectacle. And they might wonder why you're making a spectacle and be curious about you. And then you have to stay there. And you might not be able to get out after that. That's why they told me, do not telegraph. I paid attention to that and I did not telegraph. Where was I? I cannot prove. But to me, that was an example. That was giving me a for instance. So if something even more wacky and far out and unfamiliar, I wouldn't immediately have a heart attack and go, help! Now, when I was driving from one side of town to the other, and they told me to take a specific route, and I decided to take a little detour, a shortcut, because I thought it might be quicker. My husband was in the car with me, so this was helpful, because I told him, we need to drive a certain place, and I'm supposed to do this and go there. There were instructions. And so this is all telepathic. And so I'm driving and I take the shortcut and it happens to go through an apartment complex. And I realize there's no way out. You have to go back out the same way you went in. So it wasn't a shortcut. But as we are turning around, the geese on the pond are synchronized. They're forming a question mark. And in any other reality that I have experienced, geese do not, on their own, do synchronized formations of question marks. And so my husband looks at me and says, see, they wondered why you did that too, huh? Okay, so I made a mistake. I tried to take a shortcut. It didn't work. I didn't follow instructions. But in that instance, if I had not deviated from the prescribed routine, I never would have been able to integrate the fact that I was getting messages from some other source. And that source was quite aware of my actions and monitoring me. I'm wanting to know more. I don't. Every day is a learning experience, and every day is a potential for a deviation, a step off into a different dimension, a different knowing, a different awareness. And that is something to, I think, celebrate. At the same time, you're going to be doing laundry, you're going to be doing dishes, you're going to go to work, you're going to collect your paycheck, or you're going to do, you know, make friends, make enemies. Life goes on. But it's that potential for something extraordinary to appear, to happen, to connect, to step in and show you, you aren't what you think you are. And reality isn't what it seems. That's what makes being here so special. So all the negative, all the weird, all the unpleasant in the world melts when you have this extraordinary knowing that we are so much more than we can even fathom. And we're evolving. So if you have a chance, Wendy's Coffee House Blogspot, that's where I do the writing. That's where I connect the dots. That's where I add these little tangential things. It's not all ghosty, boohoo, you know, weird stuff. There was an annual sausage walk in London. They started this out like, I think it was 3 years ago. The first one, they thought nobody, no big deal. It'll just be 3 or 4 people. I think 100 and some showed up. The second year it was bigger. And this year was like 1,000. They just walked down the street. 1,000 dachshunds hit the street. Isn't that fun? Little things like that, along with the Star Child skull and weird things, quirky things. Lloyd Pye did leave a book. He was working on a bunch of stuff when he died. And even if that one didn't bear fruit, didn't turn out to be the alien Star Child that he had hoped, he had a few other valid points. Everything you know is still wrong. Okay? You're here to figure out what's right. I like that. I like that. And I think we have plenty of time to do it. So whatever, in some way, shape, or form, inspires you to think outside the box, to be curious, to ask why, what, how, who, encourages development, encourages expansion, encourages an upgrade in collective knowing, consciousness that we're all a part of, takes a giant leap, and we all grow. So thank you. I appreciate spending my time with you, and hopefully you can take away something that will give you a lift in your day. Stay curious. Till next time, you create your reality. See ya.